All right, so now we will hear a talk on step six and step seven. Step six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all our defects of character. And
Emily,
step
steps
seven,
4 and 5.
oh, why am I doing
You're in
six?
six.
That's next week. Sorry. All right, so yes, we're going to hear a talk on steps 4 and 5 with a focus on fears and sex. I'm sorry about that, guys. All right, so let's hear from Stephanie KR from Auburn, Maine. Let's give a warm welcome.
Crowd goes crazy. Wah!
Kidding. All right. Let me put the timer on. Oh, that's a 10-minute timer. That's not going to do it for me today. There we go. So my name is Stephanie, and I'm an alcoholic. So I'm not going to spend a lot of time qualifying, but trust me, I totally belong here. I'm absolutely an alcoholic. Once I put alcohol into my body in any form whatsoever, I am going to drink until I'm physically incapacitated. Bam. I cannot stop. I lack the requisite power. God evidently has that power, and I need to find a way to get cozy enough with God to access the power, has been my experience in Alcoholics Anonymous. My sobriety date is November 14th, 1992. I just celebrated 31 years of continuous sobriety, which I love to say because although I have been sober now 4 times as long, 8, 16, 32, 4 times as long as I have been drinking and that I ever drank, and more than half my life, okay, I'm still not in danger of getting well anytime soon. Because although I have been cured of a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, which I believe I have recovered from alcoholism, what I have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of my spiritual condition. So, as my sponsor says, girl, you ain't in danger of getting well anytime soon. And so, what that means is every day on the daily, I have to do this stuff. I love these steps. I love the fact that my higher power, who is a lesbian cheerleader, and for the sake of ease, I will sometimes call God, sometimes goddess, sometimes spirit of the universe, whatever. I love that my God is incredibly kind, and my God only gives me what I can handle. And what that means is I have to make the same and give the same grace to other people. And so when I listen to a four step, which we're not talking about today, but when I do, I let other people have their journey because all the women who have listened to my stuff, nobody corrected me or pointed out stuff that I hadn't seen. You know, they didn't. And so as I talk about this, I'm going to talk about this where I'm at in terms of emotional sobriety, in terms of the fact that it has become painfully apparent to me that alcohol is but a symptom. You know, you take away the alcohol, and you know what I have? I have working. I have food. I have sex. Oh my, do I have sex? I have shopping. I have shoes. I have all kinds of things. I have Alcoholics Anonymous, which can get in there and try to fill the void, the God-sized hole that I have in my soul. And so for me, emotional sobriety is about continuing to lean into God and using these steps as a guide to progress, not perfection, as a guide to be able to see where are the places that I'm still most resistant in my life and who do I want to be? Who would God have me be? Who do me and God want to make me into? That's what it's about. So, yeah, this, I don't even know what that is. Oh, there we go. So in terms of step four, specifically fear and sex, I will say that you've already talked about last time you talked about the resentment list, right? And the way it was explained to me, because I didn't have resentments when I got here. And now when I'm trying to deal with my emotional sobriety, I don't often get to the point of like full-fledged resentment, right? But how it starts for me is I feel a little icky. I feel a little something, something, right? I will walk in and I'll see someone in a meeting and I'll think, ugh, right? That's all it is. And it could be a work meeting or an AA meeting, whatever. It's just a little bleh. And so for me, I have to write down all those times when I feel dis-ease, when I feel disturbed, when I don't feel comfortable. Because if my primary purpose is to fit myself to be of maximum service to God and those about me, if you walk in and I feel a little bleh about you, I can't be open and honest and loving and for you. right? Because I'm worried that you're prettier than me. I'm worried that you're smarter than me. I'm worried about the cute person that I like really likes you. We got no place for that in God's world, right? I mean, we have a lot of place for that in our human world, but in God's perfect ideal, we're getting rid of that. And for me, the steps have been the way to do that. So I write down all those resentments. Now, as I'm writing down the resentments, this is why I'm actually talking about this. As I'm writing down those resentments, it says that we make a list of fears, right? And it says it, hold on, I have my book. I'm going to be accessing the book. No, it's the next one. Yes, page 68, paragraph 1. We reviewed our fears thoroughly. We put them on paper, even though we had no resentment in connection with them. We asked ourselves why we had them. And so, like, this is when I'm doing my resentments and stuff, and I ask, where was I selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, or afraid? If I'm afraid, right? If I'm afraid, if I'm mad at my mother because she never listens to me, and what I figure out is that I'm really afraid that if she's not paying constant, minute attention to me, she doesn't love me enough, right? Because it's always about not loving me enough, not loving me the right way. And so when I realize I'm afraid people won't love me the way I need to be loved, I just write that on a list, a separate list of paper, right? I write that on my little fear inventory and I just list them all down. And then I think about, like, what am I afraid of? Like, I have this fear of squirrels falling in my head and scratching my brains out when I walk in parks. I don't know why that is, but it's a real fear, right? I'm sure it has to do with control and the vastness of nature, but I write them down. And then the book says, we ask ourselves why we have them. Wasn't it because self-reliance failed us? And I know I talk about this and people who know me are sick of it, but this is a wonderfully divinely inspired book, but it's a wonderfully divinely inspired book that was written by 77 white dudes who had less than 7 years of sobriety. And so while I don't disagree that sometimes it is because of self-reliance, which would be very relevant for a white guy, for me, it wasn't about self-reliance that failed me. It was self-esteem that failed me. I didn't believe, like, when I didn't have resentment because, like, of course my boyfriends and girlfriends cheated on me. I was too fat. Of course my bosses fired me. I was too stupid. I was wallowing in self-pity because when I got here, I had no self-esteem. I had no belief that I was worth this. The only reason I even came to AA or did AA was because I wanted to fix my boyfriend. So, hey to Olivia the Al-Anon, right? Because that's what I was about. I was all about believing that if only he would treat me the way I needed to be treated, if only he could see who I really was, then I would be okay. What I didn't realize was that it was all between me and God. Anything I look for outside of me and God, I am going to be disappointed and often behaving badly. That's what these steps have told me. So I write down all these fears. And I ask myself, why do I have them? And that's going to be relevant when we get to the next part, right? Because I need to trust God. And then blah, blah, blah. So now about sex. So this is the one I really want to talk a lot about, because sex inventories oftentimes get short shrift here in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I know a lot of people who don't actually, and I've done them. I'm trying to make sure of my timer, but I know a lot of people who have done them and, like, just, like, made a list of all the people they've ever had sex with and stuff. And, like, if that's what you're doing, like, that's great. I did one of those too. It served its purpose. It was exactly what God needed me to do in exactly that time. So there have been times when the questions that, of course, ironically are on page 69, where we review our conduct over the years past. Where have we been selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate? Whom had we hurt? Did we unjustifiably arouse suspicion, jealousy, or bitterness? Like, dude, I thought that was the purpose of a relationship. I thought he didn't really love you enough unless he was jealous, right? Like, I can remember well into sobriety. I can remember, I think I was already divorced. So I was at least 15 years sober. And I was dating someone. And I said to them, I just need some space to figure out what's going on with me. And then you know what they didn't do? They didn't freaking call me. They didn't text me. And so I, of course, was complaining to my sponsor. Well, they don't even care. They haven't even texted me. And she said to me, Stephanie, that's respect. And I'm like, well, I don't like that. I don't like that one bit. Okay. Because I don't like the way that that makes me feel. Right? Because what I feel when other people respect my boundaries, what it does is it makes me responsible for my happiness. It makes me have to figure out my emotions and work with my creator to be okay. Come on, it's way better if you just come over and buy me a pair of shoes and then we can have a fight. Like that is much, much more comfortable for me. That's evidently not the way we get well, right? And thankfully, my God has continued to provide me opportunity after opportunity after opportunity after opportunity to learn the same lesson. I do think I'm getting better though, for real. And so when I get to this point, when I get to the sex inventory thing, like my whole thing with all of this is, and it says it, that the main purpose of this book is to help you find a relationship with your creator. That's it, right? Whatever it is, whatever you think it is. And so I believe that with all step work, what we do is we pray and we ask for God's direction, right? If you feel compelled to make a list of every person you've ever had sex with and you're writing down, the dude from Berkeley on the bus, which, hey, been there, done that, literally. If you're writing down things like that and that's what's making you feel free and feel closer to God, if you like it, I love it, right? If you feel like you need to go through the questions and say, where was I selfish? And think about what are the names that intuitively come into your brain and then write about that. If you're only writing about people that you had physical sex with, like rock on. For me, a lot of this comes down to power and intimacy, right? It comes down to emotional intimacy and safety. And I couldn't get there my first 1, 5, 10, 15, maybe 20 years. But I'm starting to get there now, right? So when I get to this place, I always tell people that you just pray. You pray and you write what God has you write, for sure. But can we offer direction? Absolutely. And I can look at these questions and think about each relationship in terms of them, or think about the questions and what relationships they bring up. All relationships for me, because a lot of these are seriously my mother or my sister or my friends, right? I have this awful thing with best friends. Many people know my best friend lives in Virginia and she's the best person ever. But and I love her so much. But like when she tells me she goes out to lunch with someone else, despite the fact that we live 1,700 miles apart, I feel a little pang of jealousy sometimes, not always, but that's an indication of my spiritual condition, right? Because when, like, she told me yesterday that her son is home for Christmas, that made me feel so happy because I know how happy that makes her. Even though right now, I'm not a big fan of my own sons who are in the other room, but that's okay because I don't have to be in competition today, right? And so one of the fears that I recognized was that I would fear I would never live up to, I would never be as good as. And all those things have this competitive comparison built into them. And so what do I do? What's the action I take? Is I write these little post-it notes that say, this is not a competition, or no one compares to you. And I put them on my mirror and I look at them until I internalize them. And I don't know why cheesy feel good stuff like that works. I don't want it to work. Okay. I want to have some logical checkbox that is not emotionally relevant to do, but that's evidently not how my God works. But so when I get to this point in the step, it's too good. When I get to this point in the step, I have people turn to page 21. So I'm going to have us turn to page 21 too, particularly when I'm dealing with people who are looking to work the steps and think about emotional sobriety. Okay. And so what we do is we look at paragraph 21 too. And instead of drinking, because drinking is but a symptom, I can insert anything there because there's this whole paragraph about lack of control. Right. And so for me, one of the most clear problems in my life, one of the clear spaces of unmanageability was romantic relationships, right? I absolutely fell in love with potential. I thought I could change people into being exactly what I needed. I thought I needed someone to complete me. I thought that as a woman, I was evaluated by the quality of my partner, right? There's so much wrong with all of that. But so when I think about this paragraph, right? She does absurd, incredible, tragic things while in a relationship. Absolutely true. First thing to go is my voice. I suddenly don't want to upset anyone. It's not that big of a deal. He's trying. Everybody should accommodate in relationships, right? She is a real Dr. Jekyll and Ms. Hyde. Oh, yeah, I am, especially when I was drinking and in relationships. You could meet me at the bar, and I was Sally Little Sweetheart. And by the nighttime, I was like Stephanie Stalker. I was going to stab you. Like there's no telling where I'm going. Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, if you're behaving the way that makes me comfortable, I just love you to pieces. But if you're not, watch out. Because what am I going to do as a master manipulator who has no idea what my own personal principles are because I haven't done step six yet? I am going to be kind to you. And if that doesn't work, I'm going to be mean to you. And if that doesn't work, I'm going to bully you. And if that doesn't work, I'm going to passive aggressive narcissist your brain. I'm going to do whatever it takes to get you to behave the way that makes me feel better. Because I still have that false belief that other people are going to make me whole or make me complete or whatever. She is seldom mildly in love. That is me. Right. When I went on a date, and this is long, 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 long into sobriety. I mean, for God's sakes, I met my ex-husband. He came and spoke. I spoke at a meeting. He told me I had a nice story. I basically married him. Right. That's what happens in my life. I show up with a toothbrush and I'm staying. Right. I am seldom mildly in love. I didn't understand. I had to learn after I got divorced that trust is not something that everybody automatically gets, that not everybody in my life deserves the same amount of my emotional intimacy and honesty, that I can meet those things out. And it doesn't mean that I'm being bad or stingy. It means that I'm protecting myself and honoring what other people are capable of, right? And so for me, a lot of this, I have to realize that it's about me and the fact that I go into relationships expecting everybody to be my everything. And that's ridiculous. Who can do that? I can't even do that. Of course. She is always more or less insanely in love. And this was me, right? This was me for a long, long time into sobriety. And, you know, I was one of those people drinking and in sobriety who, although I had a person, I had a backup. I wasn't technically doing anything unprincipled, right? There was actually no physical contact, which of course is the measure, was my measure of infidelity. But was I talking to someone and giving them the, hey, hey, how you doing? Just to make sure that they were still on the hook? You bet your life I was. And what did that reveal to me when I looked at that in terms of my step work? It revealed to me that my terror of being alone is significant, that I will violate my own personal principles to make sure that there's a person. And when I looked at that further, and a lot of people who know me know this, I always thought after I got divorced, my ex-husband got married in like 20 minutes, which is fine. She's lovely. They're happy. God bless them. But what that did to me, I mean, it didn't. What I allowed happen to me, I don't know how the Al-Anons talk about it. I mean, I do, but whatever. What happened for me was I felt like I couldn't do a relationship right. I had failed. I can't be married. I can't keep someone. It was all about me. It's always all about me, right? And when I did this work at first in like 2008, 2009, when I did the emotional sobriety stuff, what came out was this really big fear of being alone. Because I always had a person. I was never single. Even when I was single, I was swiping, you know, just looking, just amusing myself. But there was always something. And so when I was finally, you know, no drugs, no alcohol, no miscellaneous people, and did some more work, what I realized is I'm actually not afraid of being alone. What I'm afraid of is what you think of me if I'm alone. That's what it is. I love being by myself. I love, like, when I go to bed at night and I do my little gratitude journal and I have my little sleepy time tea and I got my damn dog who's always right up my grill, right? When we get in that bed with the little electric blanket on, my toes are wiggling. I'm so darn happy. Right. And I finally, after being so single for a really long time, I've gotten to a place where, like, would I like to have a partner? Absolutely. Would I love to share my life with someone? Totally. Am I absolutely willing to wait until God brings me that person? Without a doubt. Without a doubt. I'm not picking anymore because I pick, as we've learned, based on potential. I pick based on what I think other people are going to think. I pick based on appearance, right? Which is the worst reason to pick. The worst, right? I mean, I don't so much anymore. Now, what I think is sexy and what makes my heart like crazy is like someone who's kind, someone who is like brazen and brash with their spirituality. That's pretty hot. Someone who is funny. If you're funny and spiritual, I can't even. But before, I wouldn't have wanted that, because that's goofy. That's not mature. That's not who I think I should be. I'm a professor, don't you know? I can't be running around the house with Nerf guns. Oh, yes. Yes, I can. Yes, I can. Okay. So hold on. I'm supposed to be on page 21. I lost everything. I don't even know really. But you get what I'm saying. 21. Oh, yeah. Always more or less insanely and drunk. Insanely in love. Her disposition while in a relationship, this is the one that kills me. Her disposition while in a relationship resembles her normal nature, but little. And that's the thing. That's what it comes down to me, for me, with relationships, with AA, with work. When any of those things become symptoms, what they do is they change who I am, right? I change who I am. And my disposition while in those things, when I'm working, all of a sudden I get power driven and egotistical and I think that I'm important. When I'm in AA, all of a sudden I am sober so long and I have so much sobriety. All of those things. But see, here's the thing. And this is in step 6. So this is a little spoiler alert, but it says it. And I think it says it in 5 too. But what it says is that all of our instincts are God-given, right? So pride, desire for a romantic relationship, all of it is God-given. It is only the degree that my fear and my fear warps it and twists it, that it becomes a defect of character, right? So if I'm proud of the job that I do, or I'm proud of the mother that I am, then that's great. But when I think because I'm so good, I don't have to prepare, or because I'm so good, I can make others feel less than, that is exactly the rate at which I depart from God's will, right? And so I have to be super careful. That's what I'm looking for when I'm looking in these steps, particularly on the 10 and 11, but also in this one as well, right? When I'm doing the emotional sobriety work and I'm trying to figure out, like, what are the patterns that have, what are the motives? What are the things that continue to drive me? And for me, they come down to a couple few, right? One, the false belief that there is not enough, that there is a limited amount of love, success, beauty, prestige, accolades in the world. And that if you get some, I have less, that it's pie. That's false. It's false. And again, just like when my friend goes to lunch, I can tell this. If a beautiful woman walks into a room, I can check my spiritual condition and how much I believe that God is abundance based on if she walks in and I'm like, you go, girl, and I'm happy for her, that means I'm in fit spiritual condition. If she walks in and I think, ugh, I wish I was thinner. I wish I was younger. I wish I was prettier. I wish I was blonder. I wish I was any of that crap. That means that there's something going on with me, that somehow I have forgotten that there is enough. And the other one, right, closely related, is that I am enough. This has been absolutely positively the hardest one. To believe that I am enough, not doing, right? I don't have to do more to be enough anymore. I am not valued because of what I do. I am not valued because I'm a professor or a mother or an ex-wife or a sponsor, or I'm not valued because I can buy things for you or do things for you. I am not valued even because I can speak at this meeting. I am valued because I am divine, because I am part of God. That's why. And that's all I need to be valued. That other stuff, bonus. Sometimes I just use it for bad ends, right? That's why we have to keep looking at our motives. But for the most part, I am enough. I am brutally enough. And I am divine. And so thinking that I am not enough and thinking that there is not enough are usually the two ways that my disease warps my thinking and causes me to act. And like, I only have 2 more minutes, but causes me to act from a place of my head, right? Where I'm thinking, what should I do? I'm thinking, when the answer on page 55 is super clear. Deep down inside, every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. In the last analysis, it is only there where she may be found. Alcoholics Anonymous and these 12 steps, without a doubt, are my solution. They give me a process that I can pick up and that I can collaborate with God and usually another female sober alcoholic, where I can collaborate and get through anything in my life. But the thing is, although it's my solution, only God has my answers. and nobody else does. And it says it very clearly, only God can be the arbiter of our sex conduct. And that is true of all conduct. I do not judge anyone. I try to meet them where they're at. And all my sponsors and the women and men in my circle do the same for me. And yeah, I wish that for you on your journey as well. And I have to stop talking. So thank you. Bye.